Co-fertility is essentially, it's a new fertility ecosystem where we give women the opportunity to freeze their eggs for free when they donate half to intended parents who can't otherwise conceive. So people who struggle with infertility, gay dads, cancer survivors, and more. And we provide support and education to everyone in the process along the way. So you're spot on, right? All three of us had what we like to call very, very winding roads to becoming moms. All three of our experiences were really different. I know Hallie, one of my co-founders, would tell you that her biggest regret in life, or one of her biggest regrets in life, is not freezing her eggs at age 25, only to find out in her early and mid and late 30s that she really would have benefited from having those eggs.
Welcome to The Mom Feed, a podcast about the transition into motherhood. I'm Lauren Lobley, also known as Mom, Mommy, and Mom to two young kids, Madison and Liam. When a woman becomes a mother, she experiences the most neurobiological changes in her life. This transitional period is called Matrisense. Learning about this helped my journey into motherhood make so much more sense, and I want you to feel the same way. So, if you are a soon-to-be mom, new mom, or already in the thick of motherhood, this podcast is for you. Join me and my guests each week as we tackle various topics in and around life as a mother. Ready? Let's go. Hey, Mama, welcome back to the Mom Feed. And if you're just joining us for the first time, I am so glad you are here. However you found your way to this show, it is an absolute pleasure to have you here. I was going to say it was a pleasure to meet you, but obviously this is not a two-way communication at this point. But let's assume that we're meeting and I'm shaking your hand. Hello. Anyway, today on the show, we are talking to a powerhouse of a mom and a woman who, together with her two other co-founders, also mothers, started a company called Co-Fertility that is reshaping egg freezing and egg donation. Now, before you go saying, oh, that's not for me, I'm going to turn this off, please hang on a second, because I know you're going to find something in the show today for you. Because not only are we going to discuss the landscape of egg freezing and egg donation, fertility and infertility, and many of the things that all of that comes along with, but we are also discussing entrepreneurship and how to be a working mom outside of the house. All of us moms work. Let's make sure we get that clear. We are all working moms. Some of us happen to work outside of the house in a different role outside of motherhood when we are, you know, at certain hours of the day. And how do we do that? How do we, whether we work outside the house or we work inside the house, or if we have an idea for a business, or we're just like so enamored with the job that we have as an accountant or a lawyer, or I don't know, a sales clerk at a like yoga shop. I don't know. I used to do that. I loved it. How do we do that? How do we nurture our passions while somehow also being able to be present as mothers? That is the quintessential question, I think, of motherhood. And I struggle with that on the daily. Because aside from just nurturing our passions, there's also paying the bills. So if you work at home and you have a partner who works outside of the house, and they are the primary breadwinner, or if you're two working members and you both need to be working in order to pay the bills, like there's just so, it's such a nuanced conversation. And no matter which situation you are in, I think it's safe to say that we all struggle with our day-to-day finding space for ourselves, finding space for our passions, finding space for our work, whatever it is. And my guest on the show today, Lauren Mackler, has some really amazing advice to give about that. So if you're interested in that, definitely stay tuned. With respect to Co-Fertility and that beautiful business that she and her co-founder started, I believe that any of you listening with kids in their 20s or approaching their 20s, or any of you who are either prospective parents or who have a child or children and you're finding yourself experiencing something called secondary infertility, you are going to get so much out of today's episode. Lauren is a force, and she is so relatable and also so articulate And I know that you are going to walk away from this episode today armed with information you may not have known that you needed. A little bit of a background about Lauren. She's amazing on many levels, as you're about to hear, but one of the amazing things about her is that she previously founded Uber Health, a product that enables healthcare organizations to leverage Uber's massive driver network in improving healthcare outcomes through patient transportation and healthcare delivery. Under Lauren's leadership, the business helped millions of patients get to the care they needed. Outside of her professional life, Lauren's winding road of a fertility journey led her to believe that everyone should have the opportunity to freeze their eggs and that there should be better access to egg donors. I didn't know any of what Lauren is about to share, and I'm really excited that you're going to get to hear it. So let's hear what she's got to say. Okay, before we get to the show, I just want to put this little bug in your ear that if you've been fighting yourself on working out and you can't find the time to do it and it's just not conveniently fitting into your schedule, but you're really craving some kind of movement for your body. Well, first, I don't know, put on a song and dance around the house. That usually helps me. But if you want something a little bit more concrete, not to throw shade at the dancing around the house, I'm a proponent of that, but there's a workout. I'm not even going to call it a workout program anymore. There's a program that I do. It's online. It's called Unicorn Wellness Studio, and I call it a workout because it's Pilates, and there are, I want to say, about 10 different Pilates workouts every month that correlate to the calendar. So every 3 days, there's a new workout to do, and one builds on the other. But if you miss 6 workouts and, you know, say like today's March 9th, so say you go on March 9th and you haven't been on since March 1st, you can still do the March 9th workout. You're still going to get a lot out of it. I just like that it takes the thinking out of it for me. And it's there for me, like a faithful companion when I need it. So if this calls to you, I would highly suggest checking it out. The workouts are only 30 minutes long. And most of the time, I do it in my pajamas. I don't even use my mat half the time because I'm like, have to convince myself, or rather, I don't want there to be a barrier of, oh, I've got to roll out the mat. Oh, I've got to get dressed. Oh, I've got to do this. And then so then I don't do the workout. So I just open up my computer, find the date, and I do the Pilates workout in my pajamas. Half the time it's in the dark because it's at like 5 o'clock in the morning or in the evening. And I just do the workout. And that has been such a game changer for me. And you can try it for free. I think it's a 7-day free trial. Sometimes it's a 30-day free trial. So go check it out. You go to the momfeed.com, go to the shop page, and there's a link to Unicorn Wellness Studio to try it out to see if it works for you. The other reason why I'm saying it's not just a workout is because there's an astrological, tarot, spiritual component to it. So every workout is actually infused with Reiki. And you might be like, what is Reiki? Reiki is energy healing. You may not believe in it, but I'll tell you, anybody who has ever tried this workout, whenever they get off the mat after 30 minutes, and get off the mat means when they finished a class, you can't explain it, but it's like you're walking taller. You feel better. Like, what is that? Maybe it's because you stretched your body in a great way or you worked your body out. I don't know. I think it's a little bit of the combination of an excellent Pilates class mixed with the Reiki that Tandy, who is the instructor and founder of Unicorn Wellness Studio, infuses into every one of the workouts. And then what's also great is that every month there are 2 tarot readings for the full moon and the new moon. So you can get a little bit of insight into what's in store for the collective for the new moon and the full moon. And then there's an energy healing meditation for the month. So it's this really beautiful spiritual offering. So if you're into that kind of thing, it's great. If you're like, I'm not into spiritual stuff, but I am into Pilates, I honestly mostly just use it for Pilates. So I highly recommend checking it out. So Unicorn Wellness Studio, if you go to the momfeed.com, to the shop page, and scroll down to the beautiful Unicorn Wellness link. It's a fuchsia pink unicorn with a white background. You really can't miss it. And just click on it and try it out for free. There's no commitment necessary. Okay. Let's talk to another powerful woman doing powerful things, Lauren Mackler. All right, Lauren Mackler, first of all, we share the same first name, so I already like you.
Do.
That's, I'm biased, but it's a great name.
Agree.
Yeah, right. You are the CEO and founder of this wonderful company, CoFertility.
Yes, co-founder. I have two amazing co-founders.
That's right.
There's three of us, yes.
That's right. Three women, mom, co-founders. I love this. Okay, so behind every successful company are either one or two or a group of very passionate entrepreneurs who solved their own problem and then wanted to solve the same problem for other people because they were so passionate about it. That is how you and your wonderful co-founders came to found CoFertility, right?
Yes. Yep.
Can you tell us a little bit about the story behind it?
Yeah. Well, why don't I first just give you like the quick one-liner of what we do?
Okay.
Just so people have that context. But CoFertility is essentially, it's a new fertility ecosystem where we give women the opportunity to freeze their eggs for free when they donate half to intended parents who can't otherwise conceive. So people who struggle with infertility, gay dads, cancer survivors, and more. And we provide support and education to everyone in the process along the way. So you're spot on, right? All three of us had what we like to call very, very winding roads to becoming moms. All three of our experiences were really different. I know Hallie, one of my co-founders, would tell you that her biggest regret in life, or one of her biggest regrets in life, is not freezing her eggs at age 25, you know, only to find out in her early and mid and late 30s that she really would have benefited from having those eggs. Arielle, you know, started trying to get pregnant at 28 and found out that she was going to have a very long road ahead with IVF. And then for me, my story is a little bit different in that, in maybe 5-6 years ago, I was diagnosed with an incredibly rare abdominal disease, like one of 150 people on the planet to ever get it, and was told that I would have a number of surgeries to help manage and sort of remove this disease, and that my fertility would be in question. And I wanted to know what my options were, like, should I freeze my eggs ahead of the surgery? And I was told that just given how rare my disease was, that that might not be a good option, given we didn't have any like data to support that that would be a good idea. And so egg donation was brought up as like a potential option for me should I need eggs someday following these surgeries. And so I looked into what that meant and what that looked like and was pretty shocked at what I saw. I couldn't believe that cash compensation for donors was such an important like part of the equation, at least in the US for egg donors, and that the more specific you are with what you want in a donor, so like if you have a specific heritage or religion in mind of a donor, that the cost just goes way up. And you know, oftentimes a donor is like cycling multiple times to help lots of families, and it just felt kind of icky from my perspective. And what ended up happening was my sister actually decided to freeze her eggs and donate them to me ahead of my surgeries so that in the event I needed them someday, I would have them as a backup plan, and that I could like go into my surgeries sort of with that peace of mind knowing that they were there. Wow. And forever be grateful for that gift. And what ended up happening years later, three surgeries later, my husband and I decided it was time for us to try for a family. My doctor said, you know, hey, try for 6 months. If you're not pregnant after 6 months, like let's talk about using your sister's eggs as a path forward. I'm someone who on that sixth month, I conceived unassisted without using my sister's eggs and now have a beautiful 20-month-old daughter. But after I gave birth, I just had this like extreme moment of clarity that I wanted to build something in the reproductive health space. And I never stopped thinking about egg donation. And I should say too, before starting this company, I spent 8 years at Uber and launched Uber across the East Coast and then and built the healthcare arm of Uber called Uber Health. And so I knew what it would take to like build something, I think, in the digital health space and sort of to look at an old problem in a new way, right? Like that's what Uber was all about. And so I started to think about the reproductive health space through that lens. And that's when Hallie, one of my two co-founders, slid into my DMs, honestly, talk about, you know, how people network these days, right? Like she and I had connected over Instagram and she asked me what I was working on. And I told her, hey, I'm actually like I want to do something in the reproductive health space. She asked me for my phone number and we got on the phone and she pitched me on the idea for what is now Co-Fertility without even knowing that I had gone through my own health and, you know, egg freezing, egg donation journey. And so it really just felt like the stars all aligned in this incredible moment. And from that day forward, we never looked back.
Wow. And Ariel is your third.
Yes. How did yes. you know her? Yeah. So Ariel, so I should mention too, before this, Hallie built a company called Natalist, which for all the moms out there, maybe they're familiar. They make pregnancy tests, ovulation kits, prenatal vitamins, things like that. Mm-hmm. She actually sold that company to Everly Well, but while she was building Natalist, she had done a partnership with Ariel, who had built what was actually the first iteration of Co-Fertility. It was a content site and community for all of your fertility questions asked and answered. And they had built a really great rapport during that experience. And so when Hallie and I came together, it was pretty clear to us that what we were doing really was a marketing and content-driven challenge or opportunity. And so we wanted to bring someone on with that kind of expertise. And that's where Ariel came in.
Wow. I just, yeah. I'm thinking of, I almost see Charlie's Angels. Like I just have this vision of you three.
I love that.
Powerhouse. Yes. I mean,
I can't wait to tell them that.
Tell them that. that could be your new theme song. What is that?
Yeah.
I don't know what the thing is, but wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So I have 1,000 questions, of course. Let's start with, so one of the things that right up at the front of your website, it says that you raised $5 million to reshape egg freezing and egg donation. So what I want to do is get into the process of egg freezing and egg donation and who might want to be thinking about it. But first, the story of, so women's health doesn't get a lot of funding.
Certainly needs more, that's for sure.
Right. Like we've got hyperemesis, endometriosis, and we don't really have good research. We don't really have good support for women. There's so many women health issues that don't get, they just don't get the funding. So yeah. How did you convince and who did you convince?
Yeah.
Like in raising $5 million, how did you get them to care?
Yeah.
How'd you do that?
Well, so before we started down the path of fundraising, the first thing I said to Hallie was like, I love this idea. I can't stop thinking about it, which by the way is a very good sign that that's what you should be working on. Excuse me. And so couldn't stop thinking about it, but I was like, I need evidence. I need to know that if we were to move forward with this, that women would actually be interested in this, right? Like I knew intended parents needed eggs. Like that, I could find the data all day long. Mm-hmm. What I didn't know was like, are women going to be interested in our split program, right? Of like freezing their eggs and donating half of them, right? In exchange, like having that be the model as opposed to the traditional cash compensation model. And so we created a type form survey and asked a few Instagram influencers that we knew peripherally to post that survey just to like get it out in the world and to find out like, would people do this? And that survey came back and it was, I remember like refreshing the page, like all day long for 2 days because I like couldn't believe the results. 66% of women, when posed with the question of would they do it, said maybe yes or definitely yes. I was like blown away, right? And so when I had that evidence, it was like, okay, we're on to something. And that nugget, that piece of data really helped drive those conversations with investors. So by being able to like take some of the question out of their mind, we made it a lot, it made it a lot easier to convince them. Mm-hmm. But I'll say the biggest like strategy that we had with this fundraise was instead of trying to get people to care, we started with people we knew would care, mm-hmm. right? So we started by pitching women investors and we'd have a conversation with one woman investor and she'd be like, oh my gosh, let me tell you this story, whether it was about her or a friend or a, you know, a sister or whomever who like either egg donation or IVF or something related, like had touched her life. Mm-hmm. And we felt that like, that really was like a hook for this, you know, the first investor to care. Right. And from there, what happened was pretty amazing in that after we would get, you know, okay, we're thinking about it or, you know, yes, we want to invest. It quickly became, you know, who you really need to talk to is so-and-so at such and such, right? So it's like, let me introduce you to somebody else. And so that happened a ton where one woman investor would introduce us to another woman investor. And that's not to say we didn't get no's along the way because I have never heard of a single fundraising process that doesn't have some no's, right? But finding the investors you know will care about your problem is how to do it, right? So we, once we figured out from like an institutional investor standpoint, so we ended up working with Initialized and with Offline, two incredible women investors, Parul Singh and Britt Morin, and some other smaller funds as well. But really the angel investors are what we cared a lot about and was very time consuming. And we wanted to round out the round with angel investors, not because anyone, like it's not like you want to have a ton of angel investors because it can be a lot to manage, but when they can add value to what you're doing besides just writing a check, that is amazing, right? When you can bring on investors who can become mentors or who can help open doors for your company, that's really valuable. And so we had a ton of luck with women who were like, yes, I want to be an angel investor, but only if you make room for this other woman who I care a ton about, who will care so much about your mission. And I think the fact that that happened, plus, you know, our mission just resonated with so many people, made it possible.
Right. Wow. So I feel like I want to veer off into this entrepreneurial conversation.
Yeah, I love that.
I think we need to do a part two because we could have an entire 3 hours on entrepreneurship. But and what you're talking about, I'm currently taking Tony Robbins' old sales course.
Oh, cool.
And it's really like, you know, you're not, sales is just relationship building and you do exactly what you just said, where like you don't want to pick up the phone and cold call somebody. Mm-mm. You want warm and hot leads. Like that's how it works. And that's what you did. And it's not salesy. It's like, this is my mission. And you're basically just trying to find people who believe in that mission and can help you bring it to fruition. That's it.
That, and I think like, and this probably would align with what I know of Tony Robbins, but like the more you believe your mission and the more passion that comes through in you talking about it, the more likely someone else is to connect with it and to say, I want to be a part of that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And if you think of it like energy, like, you know, those people, when somebody walks in the room, they're just like, they're like tapped in, tuned in, turned on, you cannot help. Like, it's like you look at them before you even see them because you can feel them versus like the ER who comes into the room and you're like, oh my gosh,
totally
whole room down. It's the same thing. People can suss out. They can tell right away.
Yeah.
How you feel about something. Oh, wow. Okay.
Sure.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say the one thing that like I will never forget is the day that we actually pitched Parle's Whole Fund at Initialized and Brit at Offline was my daughter's 6-month birthday. And I'll never forget that day because I actually had to miss her pediatrician appointment in person, but I got to join my husband, like had me on FaceTime the whole in between those two meetings. And it was just this like moment of, wow, you know what? Like, yeah, I was bummed that I wasn't there in person, but I didn't actually miss it because I got to be there for it, you know, virtually even.
Right.
And I got to do these two, what ended up being like the most important meetings of our whole round.
Yeah.
On the same day. And a pretty big milestone, you know, as a first time mom and, or any kind of mom, I think, right? Your kid's 6-month birthday is a big deal.
Absolutely. And also, you know, knowing that they won't remember and how much of a legacy, too. Right? And, but like the legacy you're creating for her.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah,
totally.
That little one is lucky to have a mom like you, Lauren. I can tell
Thank
you.
Thank you.
Right
Thank
now. You. And I've only known you for half an hour. Okay. So I want us to get into a discussion. We were talking offline about secondary infertility and we'll get there. But for now, can you just give us, for people who are like, I don't know anything about the process of egg freezing and egg donation. You mentioned the cost. So I'd love to talk about the cost. You mentioned that you said about the cost, at least in the US. So I'm wondering if it's different in other countries, but just kind of give us a bit of background on the process of egg freezing and egg donation and what about it needs to change.
Yeah. So let's start with egg freezing. Okay. Egg freezing is a process where women are able to essentially get their eggs frozen in time. That's really it, right? Like what people need to understand about their eggs is that their quality diminishes over time and their quantity diminishes over time. And so capturing those eggs and retrieving them and freezing them while you're younger gives you better chances of success later in life if you need them, right? So like that's why they say people are have a better chance at having a baby the younger that they are. And so egg freezing is, you know, a really cool, in my opinion, right? Like medical procedure that was experimental until 2012. So that label was removed then. And, you know, the number of women who undergo egg freezing is just growing at crazy fast clip ever since. I think like in 2009, it was, you know, under 500 people who froze their eggs. And, you know, now it's in the tens of thousands. So it's growing, which is really cool. And part of the reason for that is that women are starting their families later than ever, right? So we know, I think, you know, the data says that the average age of a woman giving birth now in the US is actually 30, which is the highest on record. And we know that that shift is coming from women focusing on their careers or focusing on higher education or pursuing different goals that they have, or maybe just refusing to settle for a partner that they know they don't want to build a life with, right? Like they are making more empowered choices. And the downside though, right, is that like our biology hasn't sort of caught up to that shift in society. And so egg freezing is a great solution to that. The problem with it though is that the cost is really prohibitive for a lot of people. So in the US, and the reason I say the US is because it really does vary country by country. I think medical costs, whether you're talking about like a broken arm or egg freezing, really vary country by country, just given how different countries handle, you know, coverage and things like that. But in the US, an egg freezing procedure costs between $12,000 and $20,000. And in a lot of cases, that's not inclusive of storage. So that's just simply out of reach for most women.
Yeah.
And what we say is like the best time to freeze your eggs is actually when you can least afford it, right? So when you have money like that typically you're older, and at that point your egg quality or egg quantity has likely diminished. Right. So we believe that something needs to be done to address that problem. Some employers are starting to cover fertility benefits inclusive of egg freezing, which is great, and we're happy to see it. But typically the companies who cover it are, you know, larger tech companies or the companies who already have the employees who would be most likely to be able to afford it anyway. Right. So we feel strongly that more options need to exist. And so that's part of why we came up with our model, which is where, you know, women can have access to it for free, actually, and even store their eggs for up to 10 years free when they help another family with those eggs. And on this flip side, so now to get to your question around egg donation is, you know, an area of the world where more and more families are grown through egg donation every year, and that more people are starting their families later. Women need egg donors if they are someone who is experiencing different types of infertility, but also a lot more people in the LGBTQ community are deciding and have access to different family building options. And so we see that growing. So the need for egg donors is growing. However, there's just not enough options out there. So if you were to look at egg donation, I think, you know, I could talk to you all day about like why I think this space is broken. But I think the biggest is that there's a stigma around egg donation. And I think it's largely rooted in the fact that there's a cash compensation model. So someone who donates their eggs typically gets paid between $8,000 and $25,000 or more for their eggs, which to a lot of people feels transactional, like impersonal and icky for everybody involved, right? It's like the donor feels like they're sort of selling their eggs. The intended parent obviously doesn't feel great about paying someone for their eggs like that. And actually, there was a study that came out last year from Harvard that said, you know, over 60% of donor-conceived adults were actually bothered by the exchange of money for their donor's genetics, right? So to us, that feels like a real missed opportunity, because at its core, egg donation is someone doing good and providing a life-altering opportunity for a family, right? So this stigma is creating an issue on multiple fronts, right? It's discouraging someone from helping grow a family when that might otherwise be something they wanted to explore. It also leaves intended parents with fewer options, and it especially hurts the LGBTQ community that's like relying on egg donation for family planning. So we also just think like the experience for intended parents is very disappointing. I think a lot of times they don't get to find much out about the donor, never mind meet the donor, whereas like that's something that we give intended parents and donors the option to do, which is a match meeting, if they want to know more about each other, or at least, you know, have an opportunity to connect to see if this is someone that they want their, you know, child to technically have like a biological link to, you know. That doesn't mean they need to be in each other's lives in any sort of real way in an ongoing basis by any means, but it can be a really nice way of like deciding that you want to move forward with a donor.
Right. Well, and that's where you have, I read that you have a human-centered approach.
Yes.
Okay.
Very much so. Very much so.
And why has egg donation up to this point been an anonymous process?
You know, I think that came years and years ago, started actually on the sperm donation side, and that just became like industry. I hate even the word industry in this case, but it became the norm. That, you know, in an effort to get someone to give their sperm or their eggs, that like you had to kind of promise that they would never hear from anyone in the process, right? Like they don't even have to know if there is a baby out there or a child out there. Right. And anonymity also like encourages people to do it over and over and over again, to like continuously donate sperm or to continuously donate eggs to lots of families. I think a lot of egg banks encourage women to donate or to do as many as like 6 egg retrieval cycles, which each cycle can be divided into multiple lots of eggs, meaning that one woman could end up like donating eggs to like 30 plus families, meaning that there would be tons of biological half siblings out there. Whereas like our model is sort of like, you know what, like if a woman wants to do this, let's give her the choice. Does she want to do it once? Does she want to do 2 cycles with the same family? Like if she's interested in doing more, like give her the option to do so, but we would never, you know, push her to do that.
Right.
And, you know, I think anonymity just became this kind of like way to get more people comfortable, even intended parents worried that the donor might come after them or something like that. Right. And it just is antiquated. Right. And especially now that 23andMe and different DNA testing has just become so prevalent, right? Imagine, you know, I get updates from 23andMe all the time, like new relatives, right? Like if it's that common in 2023, what is it going to look like 18 years from now for a baby who's born now to like, it's just going to be even more common. And so we're really upfront with our donors and with our intended parents to say, hey, like, you know, if you participate in this, this is like, it's impossible for you to be entirely anonymous, even if you yourself or your child, you know, never takes a like a DNA test, because, you know, if your great uncle takes one, like you're able to be found, right? So go into this process with eyes wide open and look at it that way. And so, you know, we'd rather just be like transparent about that than try to like have some, you know, veil of anonymity that's just not real.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it sounds like in the process, I feel like you've heard of Kind Body.
Yeah.
I have a friend of mine who I can't remember if we said this offline or online, but you mentioned that somebody at 28 was having trouble receiving,
Ariel, one of my co-founders. Yeah.
And a friend of mine who I've actually interviewed on this podcast had started at the age of 27. And thinking it wasn't going to be a problem, and she could not conceive. And she went through all these different IVF doctors, and she finally found Kind Body. And they have this different approach where she just absolutely loved their approach. And I feel like you're doing
so good.
Yeah. Like it just sounds, it's like we're finally putting the divine feminine back into these processes that felt so masculine and yang, for lack of a better.
Yeah. I mean, we talk all the time of like, how do we honor, we call them members, right? How do we honor our members, whether it be someone who's an intended parent or the donor or the donor conceived person on the other end of this, right? Like instead of looking at this through the lens of like, how are we going to be profitable, right? Like I really believe that if you treat people well and you put them first, that the business will fall into place, really.
Yeah.
And especially with fertility, right? Like so many parts of someone's fertility journey, and I think all three of us as co-founders know this really well, like you are just not in the driver's seat, you know, like you're just not. And so we try as much as we can in this process to give as much, you know, do you want to have a match meeting or not? Do you want to have someone from our team on that call or not? Do you want to send the donor? Like giving choice and giving options as much as we possibly can really, I hope, makes everyone involved in the process feel like they have some ounce of control in something where they otherwise don't feel that way at all.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting, and I'm curious about there, like, is there a financial piece? Is there, because like I have a friend, they're a couple and they were having no trouble getting pregnant, but My friend could not stay pregnant. And the doctor was just like, it's just the quality of your eggs. And so, but they wanted to do, they wanted an egg donor. But it was so cost prohibitive that they couldn't. Yeah. And they just ended up putting something up on Facebook, and one of their friends donated eggs for them. And they ultimately ended up having a child whose birthday is actually tomorrow. I think he's going to be three or four tomorrow.
That's great. And I'm really happy that it worked out for them. We've heard a lot of stories where people do try to move forward with a scenario like that, where it's like a some sort of connection that they have, where it oftentimes leads to heartbreak. We actually heard of a story once where someone had offered to like give a friend a like her frozen eggs, and it turned out that the clinic like misplaced the eggs, right? Which is just so old school and antiquated. And you know, we do a lot to like vet the clinics that we work with and the storage facility to make sure that doesn't happen. But I hope that, you know, sometimes I think that experience, whether it's like in a Facebook community or something like that, it can feel like the wild, wild west.
Absolutely.
And so we like to provide as much sort of oversight and support in a process like that to make sure there's less heartbreak involved in the process.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure if they had known about you, they would have gone through you for sure.
Yeah.
So you were saying it makes it less expensive?
Oh, yeah.
People. So what is the model?
Well, because so intended parents end up with us. They do pay a coordination fee as they would with any other sort of egg donation company. And that covers, you know, our ability to find donors that are exciting to these intended parents, and our ability to like manage the entire process end to end, like all of the logistics, because there are quite a few logistics. They also pay some like administrative costs, like things like the legal fees and the things that are involved in any sort of egg donation match, plus the cost of the cycle. So, which is also normally exactly how it would be in an egg donation experience. The biggest difference, though, is we don't have donor compensation, right? So, with us, instead of paying the donor $8,000 to $25,000, or as high, I've even heard of cases where the donor gets $100,000, right? Imagine you want someone who is like a specific heritage or went to an Ivy League school, right? It goes really high. We don't believe in that, right? Like, we don't think one woman should have more costly eggs than another woman. It just does not feel right to us. Yeah. But instead of paying that, intended parents pay a very low long-term storage rate for the donor's half of the eggs. So it's like less than $3,000 for her to store her eggs for 10 years. And so that's it. And I think intended parents, they tell us they like feel better about it, right? Like, they feel like, wow, okay, at least I know in this whole experience, I'm empowering this person to own her own timeline and to have this backup plan should she experience infertility later in life.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So in the process, I'm thinking about, since you own that process so thoroughly with your donors, you know, when a woman gets pregnant or before she gets pregnant, the doctor will say, like, make sure you're taking prenatals, and, you know, and when they're pregnant, like, don't be going in a hot tub or whatever that is. You, like, all the advice that they tell you, don't smoke, don't drink, blah, blah, blah. So how closely do you monitor the, or give advice on, or recommendations on, you know, what women should do to increase the quality of their eggs?
Well, I think the coolest part about, not the coolest part, one of the cool parts, there's a lot of cool parts of our approach, is that the women who are donating are incentivized by the same thing as the intended parents, right? Like, they also want great egg quality. They also want, you know, an amazing outcome of this egg retrieval cycle. And so they are really, really eager and diligent to like follow the doctor's suggestions and guidelines like to a T. So, you know, of course, in terms of optimizing egg quality before a retrieval, and that's whether you're donating your eggs or simply freezing your eggs, the research shows that like there are small changes that definitely can, you know, improve egg quality. I think, you know, limiting alcohol intake, avoiding cannabis, you know, eating a diet that's rich in leafy greens and whole grains and lean proteins, are all part of it. And I think one thing that we do really encourage is that the women who participate in our programs directly discuss with the physician that's overseeing their retrieval, because everyone's protocol is different, right? So it's based on a number of different things. It could be like, you know, if you are on a specific birth control, perhaps they have you do something different than what someone else might do. Or if your blood work showed that, you know, you need to be on a specific, you know, prenatal or different, like it's all very individual. And so we're really careful. And this is something we have medical advisors that are work really closely with us. We don't like to give blanket guidance because so much is really individual.
Yeah, absolutely. As I mean, as with any area
of health, right? Yeah. I know.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit more? I saw the egg donation baby guarantee and I was like, wait, oh, yeah. What? Tell me more.
Yeah. So this was born out of the idea. It's funny. I didn't even mean to use the word born. it was born out of this idea that like, we really want an intended parent who's working with us to walk away with a baby. And we know that with any sort of retrieval or any egg donation cycle, that there are a lot of points in the journey where things could potentially go a different way, right? So say everything on paper for a donor looks amazing, the doctor approves her, you know, her fertility hormones look great, but maybe she does a genetic carrier screen, and when it's compared to the sperm source genetic carrier screen, there's a common trait, right? And at that point, the doctor may say, you know what, given the risk involved with this, this donor isn't a good match. We don't want to just leave intended parents hanging or require them to pay an entirely new, you know, co-fertility coordination fee. And so we put a baby guarantee on that, meaning that if somebody, say that something like that happens, or say you go through the retrieval and, you know, it just doesn't get to baby, we will rematch intended parents at no additional co-fertility fee, or we will fully refund that fee. So that's our baby guarantee. We can't obviously do that with like the cost they pay for the actual retrieval cycle.
Right.
But I think at least making them whole on that co-fertility fee is something that we feel really strongly about. We know that it makes a lot of intended parents feel really comfortable working with us. We've heard from the clinics that we partner with that it makes them feel good as well in sort of recommending co-fertility to their intended parents, because they know that our intentions are good and yeah, that we really want to help people have babies.
Human-centered approach.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. How long has co-fertility been operational?
Yeah, we launched publicly on October 19th of 2022. So
wow.
Not long, right? It's you know, February 8th of 2023 now. So just a few months, and I'm really so excited to be making matches between intended parents and split members. And we've had thousands of women apply, which has been so exciting. Wow. And yeah, it's been really exciting. And, you know, our expectations have definitely been met, if not exceeded, in terms of how things are going at this point.
Oh, I'm sure. And I can just imagine the future wall of pictures of babies from, right, from like as a result.
We talk about that all the time.
Oh.
It's so funny that you say that, because I, you know, of course it takes at least, you know, 9 months before a baby is born. So I'm just very eager for the photos of our first, we call them babies by co, you know?
Yeah. I will be watching diligently around what's 9 months from October. Maybe we'll do 9 months
right
now. I'll just be watching diligently for totally that first baby photo of like, well,
yeah,
just share it. But yeah. Wow. Oh, that's just so, Fabulous. Okay. I know we don't have a lot of time left, but I want to hit on two things that you and I talked about offline and actually a minute before about secondary infertility. So lots of people listening are already moms. Maybe they have one, maybe they have two, maybe they even have three. I know men have had many friends experience the concept of secondary infertility. So can you just kind of explain what that is and how you can support them in that?
Yeah. So secondary infertility is when you already have at least one child and you are either struggling to conceive again or struggling to stay pregnant again, right? And, you know, I think it's something that not a lot of people expect because maybe things were pretty easy to have that first child, right? Maybe it was like, oh yeah, we got pregnant, no problem. Like you kind of just sit and are comfortable thinking like, oh, you know, when the time is right or when we're ready, like a second baby will just happen just as easily. Yeah. And I don't bring this up to like instill fear because that's definitely not at all my goal here. I think my goal is more from an awareness standpoint to know that secondary infertility is something that affects a lot of people, right? And that, and the number one reason for it is age, right? Like over time, you have, you know, diminished ovarian reserve or, you know, less great egg quality. And it means that having that second child can be a lot more difficult than having the first. And so we hear from a lot of intended parents that are looking for an egg donor that, you know, maybe they have a 5-year-old or they have a 7-year-old and the journey to baby number two has just been incredibly trying. And, you know, my hope is that more women are aware that this is a thing and that it's possible and that not to say that they should rush to have a second if they're not ready or if they're not sure. I think, you know, definitely take the time to decide if you want to expand your family. But at least to have a pulse on your own fertility, right? Like to have that conversation with your doctor or to, you know, get your AMH tested or to have a handle on at least what your fertility sort of snapshot looks like. And to be mindful, right? Like if you've, you know, been trying for a certain amount of time, I think, you know, over 35, if you've been trying for more than 6 months to like, and it's not working, like have that conversation with your doctor.
Right. And can you just explain the AMH level for anybody who's like, I have heard that term, but I don't know.
Yeah. So AMH is a fertility hormone that helps to understand the quantity of eggs that you have. You know, it does not give a full picture, right? It's like a snapshot, and it's something that can be tested with a simple blood test, or it can be done like a lab ordered test from your OBGYN or a reproductive endocrinologist. And I'm sure even there are primary care physicians who could order that. Or there are a lot of at-home tests if you wanted to go that route and you felt more comfortable doing it that way. I know there are a lot of different companies that offer that as well. But I think like our position is like knowledge is power, right? Like know as much about your body as is possible and to at least be aware that that's something that, you know, is a real thing. And it comes with like complicated feelings, right? I think a lot of people are shocked if they experience, secondary infertility. I think a lot of times, you know, it can be a lot and it's with loaded feelings, you know? And so we really hope to support anybody who's going through that, whether or not they need an egg donor, you know, we just want more people to know about it and really, take action if that's what feels right for them.
Yeah. And it also, like I had my first, I think I was 31 and I knew that I wanted to take at least a few years in between children. And, you know, I think if I had known, I probably would have considered egg freezing after I had my first so that I could freeze my 32-year-old eggs instead of waiting until it was 35, you know, just so that I had that option. from it, like from a knowledge standpoint. And I remember a friend of mine, our children used to be very close, and then we moved away from each other, which happens, but she was 40 and 41 and started trying. And her doctor was like, your fertility kind of like, it starts decreasing at 35, but it goes off a cliff after 40. Yeah. She's like, why didn't any of my doctors tell me that? Why did I not know that until I got to 40 or 41? And now you're telling me. Because I would have made different choices.
Right. Right. And that's like part of what we are trying to do, right? So we believe, yes, I think fertility is becoming more a part of a conversation, right? People know that one in four pregnancies ends in miscarriage, right? Like that's something that is becoming more mainstream. But what isn't yet mainstream is that there are things women can do to proactively preserve their fertility. And so I think, you know, more people in their 30s and 40s are starting to know that. We want to bring this conversation. What we're doing is have this conversation with women in their 20s so that as they're thinking about their life and planning their goals and, you know, figuring out what they want to do, this should be part of that. Like it's like a rite of passage, right? Like to consider your fertility and just make decisions around it. It's not something, you know, it's not necessarily right for everybody, but it definitely is right for a lot of people if the cost is not such a big concern.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I have 1,000 other questions about fertility that I want to kind of round things out with.
Yeah.
Entrepreneurship, because
sure.
Think of, I mean, you're a mom, Hallie, Ariel, all moms. Yep. And like you said, you were pitching this when your daughter was at her 6-month appointment with those two big investment appointments. Mm-hmm. And it just launched in October. So what advice do you have for any moms listening? And like so many moms are just like, feel like they're in the trenches and like, how could you start a company when you have young children? And how did you do that? And how do you stay present in your work when you're working and with your daughter when you're with your daughter?
Yeah. It's hard. Like I'm the first, I'm not going to like sit here and lie and tell you that it's easy. I remember in the very early days, of starting this company, I was clear with Hallie and Arielle. And as we grew our team, like, hey, you know, I'm on a breastfeeding journey with Eden and it's important to me to try to continue that. And I put blocks on my calendar of when I was going to be doing that. And was lucky enough that we decided to build this company remotely so that I was doing it from home. And so I could just pop out of, you know, my workspace and go, and I called it like my favorite meetings, you know, my favorite meetings of the day were like me breastfeeding and like spending some time with Eden. And, you know, I was super, I don't want to say maniacal, but like kind of maniacal about her schedule. I think that like getting her on a schedule really early helped so much because I could plan on, okay, if I, you know, breastfeed her at, 10 a.m. and I know she's going to go down like clockwork at 11, I can trust that I will, you know, have that entire nap plus whatever else like to focus on work. And as she's gotten older, like obviously, you know, I'm not breastfeeding her at this point, but her nap schedule has changed. So like now it's wild. I look at my like weekend to-do list for work and before the weekend starts, I arrange my to-do list in naps. So she has like two naps for a weekend, right? She does the like 3-hour nap each day. And so I decide like, what am I going to do during nap one? What am I going to do during nap two? And it's, being a mom, I think, has made me much more focused and much more efficient with my time because I only have so much of it. And if I want to be focused with her and present with her, I have to get my stuff done during the time, frankly, that she's sleeping.
Yeah.
I'm also really lucky. One, we have amazing childcare, and that's something that was really important to me to like get nailed down before I went on this founder, you know, quest. And so I feel really, really lucky that was squared away. But the other piece of it, I think, you know, in my husband, I found someone who isn't just like an equal partner. Like, we don't believe in this idea of a default parent. You know, there are certain things that he does, there are certain things that I do, and we both sort of try to share the list or be the list, right? The mental load of being parents. But also, he's really passionate about what I'm building and is very, very involved in the work, to the point where, like, there are things that, like, I go to him with and I say, hey, if I did this, it would take me 10 hours, but if you did it, it would take you 30 minutes. And he'll do it because he knows that, right? It means that I have other time that I could be spending either with Eden or on our things in our household or doing things that I can do in 30 minutes that might take him 10 hours, right? So we do that with each other's careers. And, you know, we've timed our bets to make sense for our family.
What a beautiful relationship.
Thank you. Yeah, it's, I mean, always a work in progress, but that's something I think in terms of us both growing in our careers has been hugely essential.
Yeah, well, and I hate to say that that story is actually not the common story. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of, I mean, that's a whole other topic, but that's part of the way that we're set up for preparing for baby. It's like the baby registry and all of that stuff, when really it needs to be conversations like, okay, how are we going to work at this as a team? How are we going to partner? How are we going to continue supporting each other within our relationship, our careers? You know, how are we going to split the responsibilities of parenthood and the household? And those conversations are not encouraged. They're starting to be, but they're not.
Oh my gosh. We need so much more of that. I saw like something that went viral yesterday on Instagram. It was like a comedian joking that like he got a call from his kid's school and the, they asked like, what number bus is your kid supposed to be on? And they were, and his response was, you know, you called the dad, right? And like, it was infuriating for all of me and for all of these moms who saw it. I was like, are you kidding? Like, why shouldn't that be something a dad knows, right? And so it's, I think like, and we've had moments in our marriage, right? Like where Jake will say to me, like, I don't have to remember that because I know you will. I'm like, oh no. Like, that's not going to work for me. No way, right? Like that. And so it's something we're working at. I think like for sure society has like made it so that like the mom remembers so the dad doesn't. And I just think it's like an old school and not okay way for things to continue. And not the example I want my daughter to have.
No, exactly. There's this wonderful woman. Her name, I think her handle is That Darn Chat. Her name is Laura Danger, and she takes TikTok and Instagram videos like that one, and then she comments on why it's not okay, and she does it in the most succinct way, and you will love her. I will send you her
find her, please, please.
She's amazing. Okay. Well, Lauren, I know it's like an overused word, but I'm so inspired by you on so many levels.
Thank you.
So appreciative of the work that you and Hallie and Ariel are putting out into the world. How can we support you? Those listening, how can I support you? How do we do this? How do we find you? All the things.
Yes. Okay. So you can find us. We actually decided that on Instagram, we have two separate accounts because the people we are talking to are just so, so different. So on the intended parent side, or anyone who's, you know, on that journey to either being a parent or is a parent, we are Family by Co, or at Family by Co. If you are someone who's interested in egg freezing, we're at Freeze by Co. And please follow us there. I think we have a ton of really interesting and compelling content. We do a ton with our medical advisors to ask questions and really just get a ton of really educational and thoughtful content out there. And then personally, I'm at Lauren Mackler. So LaurenMakler. And I absolutely love to connect with anyone who's in our community or who wants to talk more, posting a ton about what it's like to build co-fertility. So join me there. Our website is www.cofertility.com. And just so excited. I love what you're doing. I think it's so important for moms and just to have community, right? To have other people who are going through it at the same time. I love my mommy and me group. There's six of us who are like all have babies within 8 weeks of each other. It's like the best thing I ever did was finding a community.
Oh yeah. Finding the community of moms. And that's really, I just wanted to build a virtual community.
Yeah.
And it's like, people will DM me and they'll be like, I feel like we're strangers, but also like, I know you. I'm like, we yes. are not strangers. We are besties. We yes. are moms. This is a sisterhood. Yeah, we are friends forever.
For sure.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Well, I just followed you.
Okay, awesome.
And I will continue to do that, and I will follow. I'm already following everywhere else, but
amazing.
Oh, just thank you for being here. Thank you for your work, and thanks for giving me your time today.
Thank you. This has been so fun.
Agreed. I just want to thank Lauren and Hallie and Ariel for putting such a thoughtful, passion-based, human-based company together. It's really wonderful to see what happens when a group of thoughtful, powerful women, we're all thoughtful and we're all powerful in case you're wondering, but to see what happens when a group of us come together in unison with a vision, which is exactly what they did here. There is quite literally no stopping us. And I don't think it's an accident that as I'm recording this, it is International Women's Day. I know that technically you're listening to this on Thursday because that's when this episode is released, or maybe you're listening another day. Maybe you're not listening to it on a Thursday, but I know you're not listening to it on Wednesday, March 8th, because I'm recording this right now and it's not live. So it is International Women's Day today. And I could not have imagined a more perfect guest for this day. If you love the show, and if you've got friends dealing with secondary infertility or infertility of any kind, or friends in their 20s, or friends with kids in their 20s, or friends interested in egg donation and egg freezing, and actually people in their 30s too, because as I was listening to the show, or as I was not listening, well, actually, as I was listening back, but as I was also in the interview, I was realizing, shoot, you know, maybe when I was 30 or 31 or 32, even knowing that I didn't want to have another baby for a few years, I probably would have considered egg freezing. So all of the people who you think might be interested in this, please share this show with them because you're only going to help them broaden the scope of their options. That's a gift. So share it with them. If you feel called to, if you really love the show, make sure you're subscribed and consider leaving a 5-star rating. And if you really like, this is so amazing, leave a glowing review. I would be so grateful. Now, if you are into astrology and horoscopes and lunar cycles and all that fun stuff, be sure to tune in Thursday, March 23rd for a discussion with my friend Jessie Eccles, who is an astrologer. She's actually been on the show before to talk about how astrology and parenting can coincide to help you become a better parent. I know that sounds wild, but understanding your chart and your children's charts can actually enhance parenthood and all of those parenting techniques that I know you're working hard to learn and to actually execute. Learning is one thing, but then in the moment, you're like, what did that parenting book say again? Oh my gosh, I cannot remember. Anyway, the episode that I did with Jessie was episode number 77 from June 9th, 2022. So go and check that out if you're interested. This time on the 23rd, we're going to be talking about all the transits. I don't know if you've been in the astrology world, you probably heard, oh my gosh, there's all these different transits and we're moving into this new cycle. We're going to talk about that. And apparently there's some major shifting happening astrologically in March and April that are going to continue through the 2024 and 2025 and beyond, of course. So if you're into that kind of thing, and even if you're not, it's pretty interesting, definitely tune in next March 23rd, next Thursday, March 23rd to hear all about that. Okay, I'm going to go. Happy belated International Women's Day. I hope that no matter what kind of day you're having right now, that you remember how amazing and how strong and how wonderful you are. Give yourself a giant high five and a break, if that's possible. And I will see you next time.